Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Elixir Mix. This week on our panel, we have Alan Wyma.
Hello, hello.
We also have Eric Bolakowski.
Hello from Berlin.
We have a new panelist. We have Adi. I can't remember your last name, Adi.
Oh, it's Adi Iyengar. Yeah, nice to be here.
I'm Charles Max Wood from DevChat.tv, and this week we're talking to Sasha Wolf. Sasha, do you want to... You work for Better Docs, and you've written a whole bunch of interesting blog posts. I looked at a couple, but do you want to just let people know kind of what your background is with Elixir and where you kind of come from with all of this stuff?
Yeah, sure. So first of all, hello from Germany, too. So that's nice. Yeah, I'm working with Elixir for the past 4 years now. Two of those are with my current employer, Better Doc, and I actually used to work as an iOS developer with like the occasional PHP dabbling, and I always found the backend work more interesting. So when I then switched companies, I looked for something where I could work more on the backend, and I ended up at a company which used Elixir, which was my first introduction into the language, and I very much liked it. So that's why I still do it today with another company and not the one where I started doing things in the first place.
Nice. Did you work your tail off to get that senior developer gig just to realize that senior dev doesn't actually mean dream job? I've been there too. My first senior developer job was at a place where all of our triumphs were the bosses and all the failures were ours. The second one was a great place to continue to learn and grow, only for it to go under due to poor management. And now I get job offers from great places to work all the time. Not only that, but the last job interview I actually sat in was a discussion about how much my podcast had helped the people interviewing me. If you're looking for a way to get into your dream job, then join our Dev Heroes Accelerator. Not only will we help you get the kind of exposure that makes you attractive to your dream employer, but you'll be able to ask them for top dollar as well. Check it out at devheroesaccelerator.com. Now, we initially reached out to you about blog post about SSL and a plug that manage that, but I think we're going to talk about behaviors and boilerplate and the Elixir library mocks, which creates test mocks and stuff like that. Do you want to just kind of give us the story behind this? Because what I find is if we ask what the blog post is about, we kind of get kind of a rundown of what it's about. But if I ask what the story is behind it, then we get the, well, we were dealing with this problem and we found this awesome solution. And that's always way more interesting. So you want to just fill us in as far as like how you came to a place where you were using a solution like a Mox and what the problem was that it actually solved for you?
Yeah, sure. So it's actually one of our internal projects, like nothing which is like end customer facing, but something which is used by colleagues at our company internally. And that there we had like a scenario where we wanted to provide authentication, but pluggable authentication, because currently authentication happens through like an old monolith of ours, and that might change in the future. So that's why we wanted to make it pluggable, which is where a behavior came in. And then we thought a lot about, okay, how can we basically make this pluggable, right? But how can we swap out the implementation? How can we configure it? And something I've seen in the past in a few places is that there's like some function called, for example, implementation on the behavior, which fetches the actual implementation, but I always found that clunky, to be honest. And so I was thinking it would be pretty cool if we could just call this one module on the functions of the behavior, and just this takes care of the nitty-gritty stuff of like actually forwarding it to the real implementation. But then we ended up doing that. But the issue then was like, if when the behavior evolved, for example, by adding a function or by renaming a function, you always had to remember to also rename these forwarding functions. And that's actually where a library I've written came from, which I called Knigge, where basically we wrote something which takes a behavior and then generates this forwarding at compile time. So then we can now actually just configure it as before, but also use mocks to create a test mock for the behavior and plug that in during test time and use it to verify that like certain calls in our code base actually go where we expect it to go and happen, you know, how we expect it to happen. Does that answer your question?
So is Knigge a word, a German word that means something?
It's actually a German name. Like, it's a guy which used to live, and he wrote a book on the like basically about how you properly treat people, how to be polite, and all this kind of stuff. And there's actually, I think, even a whole organization around that, which is like updating the Knigge rules every year. And a lot of people in Germany think like that these Knigge rules are actually pretty overboard and too much in certain areas, but they basically are the epitome of good behavior to a certain degree. And so I felt like calling the library Knigge would be a pretty good thing, because it's opinionated and how we do this. It's probably not for everybody, but for us, it means good behaviors. So yeah, that's where the name came from.
Love it. I think it's a more thought through name than many other JavaScript. Sorry, I was from JavaScript, but many libraries that I've seen out there have just these random names. It seems to be well chosen.
Yeah, I really, really, really enjoyed naming this one. Like, it came to me at one day and I was like, yes, I'm going to name it. I mean, before that, it was like internally when we had like a first prototype, it was called like delegate generation or something like that, right? Just to have something. But yeah, Knigge is a lot more, not catchier. It also reads very nice. Use Knigge. So yeah.
So what does Knigge do? Sorry. Go ahead, Charles.
I was just saying, it just rolls off the tongue too, even in English. So
yeah. So what does Knigge do? You said that. So from your summary, it sounds like it helps with, you know, really management of callback functions. So if you change a function, you don't need to change it in multiple places. So what else can it do? So like, is it like the goal is to like decrease, or I guess like have only one way to manage all the behaviors? Yeah.
Yeah. So mostly it actually takes care of like getting a behavior and then generating functions for this behavior and forwarding the calls to those functions to the real implementation, to the one which has been configured through the application environment, through your config files. And it adds like a few additional sprinkles on top. For example, you can also, if you have a callback, if you have an optional callback, so a behavior with an optional callback, one that you might not have implemented. Like a pattern I've used also myself is that you then have a function which checks, okay, does this implementation actually implement the callback, right? And if not, then do some kind of default. And it also provides a def default, which does exactly that. So,
very cool. Very cool. So one of its applications could be to help us use mocks better then, right?
So
define implementations that could be used based on compile time configurations and just like a DSL to do that. Very cool. Yeah. Can you do it for multiple behaviors in a module?
Not at the moment. So, I mean, probably you could, to be honest, I've never tried. You probably could use Knigge twice. I've never literally tried it. I don't know what would happen, to be honest. I think it would probably work.
But, okay. Yeah. Very cool. Very cool.
Never tried it out. So to take this with a grain of salt.
Okay.
I'm really looking forward to the double Knigge.
Yeah. More good manners is always a good idea, right?
Totally.
So I'm trying to just figure this out here. So you're using this on, you said, an authentication library that you're using in your internal app. And so I'm guessing that you're using these mocks to isolate specific behaviors within the authentication system in order to make sure that like log in, log out, stuff like that happens properly, correct?
Yeah, basically. So it's actually like it's a Phoenix project which is using that, and it provides a login mask. But like I said, currently at the moment, it locks the users into our old monolith. And for testing, obviously, when you like run a test and say, okay, if like this route here comes in, I have written a unit test for that, we don't actually want to send a request to this monolith, right? So that's something we want to like to avoid, which is where like mocks then comes in, and like this pluggable implementation comes in. So for testing, we actually, in our config tests file, we have like configured the mock from mocks as the implementation for this particular module. And then we can in the test say, okay, like this function call, this request here actually called the authentication login method with a function with these and so on parameters. And instead of actually, well, then having to send a request to the real backend, right? Because that would make the test slow and brittle. That was like the whole scenario where this came from.
Sasha, I have a quick question. I'm having a hard time to actually understand about why would I want to use this, right? So let me give you more of an idea. When I create my code, I usually make a behavior similar to what you do over here. I don't do any delegation. I just make a behavior for when I test and a behavior for when I run it. Obviously, I do see the what you would need if you have like a monolith that you want to lock off, maybe in development or something. But you already have something over here where you pull it, where you put it into the config. Couldn't you just do that? I mean, why would you need this library? Or maybe I'm asking in terms of a user, right? If this is good for me, why can't I just use the config directly? Why would I want to use yours over just using config directly? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. That actually where the opinionation comes in, right? So for us, it felt very useful and very nice to just call one module and say like, as if this was the real thing. So we call authentication login and don't care that this under the hood swaps out the implementation between, for example, the development environment or the production environment or the test environment. And it just loads the real implementation under the hood when you call the function and delegates it to that. And we felt that was very useful and very, very nice because it basically provides encapsulation. Right? The rest of the code doesn't have to care about if this particular module is a behavior or if it has a behavior or that it delegates to something else, that this is not the real deal. It just says, okay, like I want to authenticate and I don't care how it happens, please authenticate me. And that's where this whole delegation idea came from. And then, if the blog post talks about it, we then noted that we had this duplication issue, right? Because we have information about the callbacks and what the arguments of the callbacks are. But then we also have a delegation, which basically specifies the same things again. So that's where we felt like generating this at compile time through the specifications of the callbacks would reduce the boilerplate necessary to do this pattern of having this module, which just passes the things to the real deal. Does that make sense? Does that answer your question?
To be honest, no, I don't really see. It's hard for me to understand, like, because like I said, I use config and I just do like you do over here. I do application.getconfig and I pull out the module that I have stubbed for my tests. And then when I run it in like development or production, I use the real module that actually has the real implementation. We actually reach out to whatever service that we need to do. So that's why I'm just trying to figure out if this would actually be useful for me, but I haven't seen anything in particular that really reaches out and lets me know what's the right thing to do. Like this add implementation you have over here in your article, I do something similar to that with my contacts in Phoenix. And so like I have like a piece of section that will send out like notification, like a push notification. If I'm running my test, I don't need to send push notifications out to GCM. I would just run through something, just return an okay Adam, right? Because it's not really useful. But in real life, obviously, I want to actually send a push notification. So that's why, you know, just use a behavior. I make sure that my mock has the same behavior as what I'm expecting and everything kind of works out for my testing. But you're doing a little bit more in here. And I didn't quite get why this would be something that people would want to use over just using config directly. Does my question make some more sense? Or
yes, I mean, so where do you then actually load the implementation, right? So where does this call application get end for fetch and where does that live for you?
Inside of my context module, right? You have your context, right? And so at the top, yeah. I have an application.get in my config. I just put the name of the module. So at compile time, it'll be there.
Yeah. Like I said, I mean, that's perfectly reasonable way to do things. Just for us, it felt nice to encapsulate the fact that we actually have to fetch a configuration inside of the module, which also specifies what functions are there. So for the rest of our code base, we just do authentication login. Like, and nobody, the rest of the code base just doesn't care that this is a behavior. It doesn't care that this has an implementation which it swaps out. And that's also where I feel the name is appropriate, because some people might say like, yeah, I don't need that. Like, I don't want to do it that way. I don't see why that's useful. And it's perfectly fine. It's opinionated. It works for us, and it's a nice pattern for us. But I definitely can see why some people would say it's not something I'd like to use.
Have you seen use cases by other people using Kniga?
I've know that at least one other place is using it in production, and I don't know specifics to be honest. Because I mean, I noticed a while ago that a package was actually depending on Kniga for testing purposes, and then I just looked into, okay, what was that doing? And I also opened the pull request because we added a new feature in Knigge, which was actually helpful in that particular area. And then like the person commented on the pull request and said, like, yeah, I'm probably going to swap this out with something else just so people don't have to install Knigge for this package. But yeah, it's great work. We use it at work too. So I can't comment that what exactly they're doing with it, but I know that the people are using it. It's also, I mean, currently it sits at around 15,000 downloads. So it's not too badly used compared to some other smaller packages I've written. So I guess some people find it useful, apart from ourselves at Pedalog.
I think I'm going to definitely give it a try. I think I might use Knigge in the behavior module itself. Generally, how I tend to use Mox is the behavior module is like the interface, and implementation is separate, like how you have it here. But I think one of the things it does for me, on top of reducing the boilerplate code, is oftentimes I've seen, like, just working with different organizations, when they use a pattern like this, they don't test whether the implementation and test environment that they expect is hooked through the same kind of workflow as the implementation in the dev environment. And this takes away the need to do that because they're getting rid of that boilerplate code. So I really like that it's, if you use this kind of process of defining implementation separate from the behavior, the module that's using behavior, I think this adds more, I guess, determinism to your code. So I like this a lot.
One thing which Knigge also has, which we found useful, is that it ships with a mixed task, which is called Knigge Verify. And what that does, it basically fetches, like, it looks through your code base for any modules which use Knigge. And then also, and then basically checks, okay, is the implementation which is configured at the moment actually there, right? So, which would, the idea being that you capture typos. Because, I mean, I've had that happen to me that, like, that you put into the configuration the real module for production and you then, like, build a release and then in production it actually blows up because, well, you have a typo in there. So that's where Knigge Verify comes in, and like it, where you just say, okay, for the prod environment, please run Knigge Verify, and then it checks, okay, are all the implementations there? It only checks if the modules are there. It doesn't really check, for example, if it actually implements the callbacks and stuff. But on that front, you can also rely on the compiler, right? The compiler prints out warnings when you don't have a callback implemented. And then you, for example, if you were, say, compile warn as errors, then you would also get the same scenario in your CI system. But that's also something which it brings to the table, and which helps in noticing these small errors which otherwise might blow up in your face.
Hey folks, if you love this podcast and would like to support the show, or if you wish you could listen without the sponsorship messages, then you're in luck. We're setting up new premium podcast feeds where you can get all of the episodes released after Christmas 2020 without the ads. Signing up will help us pay for editing and production, and you can go sign up at devchat.tv/premium.
Do you store somewhere in the module that a module uses Knigge?
How this actually works is a bit backwards. It defines a Knigge function with zero arity, which just returns
true
okay.
Or false. Oh, okay.
And then it actually, like, in the task itself, it fetches all modules which are defined by the application and just goes through each of one and checks if it has a Knigge function defined.
Great. Nice.
And so if you have an app which has like thousands of modules, it might be a little bit slow, but I mean, in the apps where we use it, this always finishes under 1 millisecond, so that's probably not half bad.
You can choose to define it only in like a specific environment too, right? Like, yeah, like dev environment where you run that task or something. But that's really cool.
That's also funny, the story where this came from, because in the beginning, in the very first version, Knigge actually did this at compile time. So I tried to like find out, okay, is the module at which you specify here or which you fetch from the configuration, does that actually exist, right? And that actually blew up sometimes because the compiler compiles the modules in parallel. And for example, if it compiles the implementation first and then it encounters the behavior, the add behavior, it will stop there and then compile the behavior, right? But if it does it the other way around, it first compiles the behavior, and only at some point later compiles the implementation is actually not there at that moment. And so when Knigge then tries to find out if implementation is there, it will go boom. So that's something, that's the reason why it's now a mixed task, because like in the beginning, it was this naive implementation, assuming I can just check if the module I want to delegate to exists. But well, the compiler makes this non-deterministic.
You can require that though, right? In the using macro inside the code, you could require the implementation module ensure that.
I can do that, but then I'm in a deadlock. Because then like the behavior requires implementation and the implementation requires behavior. So it actually does not work out. So it's the reason why this is now a mixed task and not something which Knigge does all the time. I actually have some thoughts for like a version 2.0, because if you change how Knigge does this, if you basically require that you use Knigge not in the behavior itself, but in a different module and like then specify behavior somewhere else, you could then again do this at compile time, because then you can actually say, okay, this is a separate module, the behavior, the implementation is a separate module, and my delegation module is a separate module. Now I can actually do these compile time shenanigans and say, okay, this has to exist and this has to compile first. But not sure how that would look like in practice, to be honest. I mean, you can already say for Knigge, use Knigge and then pass it a behavior, but it tends to be just easier to use it in the behavior itself because it's less typing.
Sorry, actually, looking a little bit deeper, I finally understand more. I'm also just waking up, so if you see, I'm drinking my coffee right now. So now I understand more about what this thing does. It is actually pretty cool. It's basically like synthetic sugar in what I already use. So it's definitely interesting. Sorry, I actually understand now more about what's going on. I'm just thinking in my head, you only have one implementation, right? Where you always pull it from you just give it the module based on your environment, right? What would be kind of cool is if there's like some kind of way to do runtime in the future.
You can actually say do it. Really. It has an option. I mean, in the article, it's not that laid out. The article, I mean, I wrote that when I published the first version, right? So the library has a bit evolved, but it has... Oh God, I have to double check, to be honest. I mean, it has an option where you can basically tell Knigge, okay, please delegate at runtime. And you can then also pass it like the environment. So what Knigge does by default, it basically sets the option to delegate at runtime in a manner where only in the test environment, right? So that's the default value. So in the test environment, it actually does delegate at runtime, which means it actually does the application getenv at runtime each time you call the function. But that also means you can actually swap it out, right? So in your test, you could do application putenv and put a different implementation in there, and that would actually work. While it wouldn't work for production or for development, but if you want to do that, you can tell Knigge to do that. I mean, it means you have a bit more of an overhead, because I mean, you have to do the application getenv every time, which is why Knigge by default does everything at compile time, because it reduces the overhead for a function call. But if you need that, the option is there.
Really, I'm trying to find the information. I do see the option for runtime, but I was curious about how can we do that? Because I'm thinking like to myself, like if you have like a bunch of services you need to pass information to, maybe one's overloaded, how can you maybe swap out so that you can say, okay, instead of sending the address to, you know, have the address be this one, if you have like A and B, how can you send over to B? That would be quite interesting.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting idea. I mean, it's like I said, what you can say is like delegate at runtime. So I just look at the docs. So it's delegate at runtime ? So that's the option name. And then you can pass it a Boolean. You can say true or false, but you can also pass it like only and then a list of environments. So only in test, for example, only in prod, only in whatever, or except the list of environments. And like I said, by default, it's only in test. Yeah, it might be worth a thought to have like also then a callback function. So if you basically that Knigge says you have like an _ implementation function _ you can define if you want to maybe give more flexibility in that manner. I mean the library has evolved mostly on my personal and like our company's needs, because I mean we haven't had a lot of input there. But something which recently came up was somebody who implemented the default option, which is relatively new. So you can now say use Knigge and then OTP app whatever. And then also pass the default implementation, so you don't have to put that into your config, which is actually kind of nice, because now everything you need to know about this particular module, like for the real scenario, is in one place where you say, okay, this is like the usual implementation, but you can swap it out, right? But yeah, having a function, for example, which it gets executed to fetch an implementation, is might be worth a thought if we see a use case advice for that.
Could you pass a list of keys that you can pass to the config? A lot of times people nest the configuration based on a lot of namespaces, or does it like still look for, because I see OTP application and module as default config. Can you change how Kinega looks for configurations?
Yes, to a certain degree. So it, you can, like I said, you can pass the OTP app, and then you can, it has also the option called config key, which, like I said, specifies the config key. But that does only support a simple atom at the moment. So there is actually a pull request open from somebody else to implement like a list handling there. I've left some feedback on that because, like, I think it can be written a bit more, a bit cleaner, a bit simpler. But yeah, so in the future, a future version might very much basically allow you to say config key, then pass a list of keys, and then basically does a deep, like a get in, right?
Right.
So that's the idea. But at the moment, it only allows you to pass the config key and then as a simple atom. And the default there is actually the module name where you are using Kinega. So if, for example, if you're using Kinega like in the blog post in the authentication module, then the configuration would be config, my app, then authentication, and then you would provide the implementation. That's the default.
What are your thoughts on like passing a function instead of like config key and even a runtime versus not runtime, like a function that could be validated at runtime? It adds more flexibility, but also decreases, I guess. There's many ways people can access, I guess, that implementation, but...
Yeah, I mean, I see no reason why this couldn't work. Like the only thing which people could trip up on that is, like I said, Kinega does a lot of things at compile time where it can. And I guess that if you actually say, okay, please evaluate this function over there, then the expectation might be that this always happens at runtime, but by default, it doesn't happen at runtime.
Right.
On the other hand, it could print a warning there. So it could say, okay, hey, you provided the function, but like I'm currently configured to do this at compile time, right? Mm. So do you really want to do that?
Maybe function could just be runtime then. If a function is passed, then if they want to pass at compile time, then I don't see why they would pass it as a function.
Yeah, true. That could be an option, yes. I could see why that would be useful. I mean, like I haven't had the use case yet, so that's the reason why it doesn't exist that way. But I can see why that would be useful.
I'm super excited. I'm definitely gonna give this package a try. Sorry if I'm like kind of I'm like thinking about a lot of use cases. I'm just like speaking as I'm thinking. So sorry about a lot of questions.
No worries. Happy to talk about this.
Is there any updates planned for Kinega? Or is this kind of stable where it is? There's no kind of future plans?
I consider it really stable. I mean, it is also used in production in a few projects of ours. So on that front, I think it's stable to use. Yeah. I mean, we talked about a few options to expand this or expand upon this right now. So I can certainly see how some of these would be useful. The only thing, like the real big deal, like I said, is I've been toying with an idea about doing Kinega 2.0 and actually like disallowing to like use it in the behavior itself. So like requiring to specify an external behavior and maybe then even also providing like a behavior macro, which just defines like an inline module, right? Because then Kinega can actually do a lot more at compile time. For example, it can then actually say, I want to verify that the implementation exists at compile time because I don't run into this whole deadlock scenario. I'm not sure if that, like, when that's going to happen, if that's going to happen at all, to be honest. But that's like the only thing I see which like really might change how Kinega gets used in the near of our future. Apart from that, I think it's pretty much feature complete. Apart from like these little things, right? So, for example, saying okay, the config key can now be a list. But yeah, I don't think that there's a lot missing in terms of features like to really make this a lot more useful.
Cool. Well, if people want to check it out or follow up with you on anything, where do they find it?
And they find it on GitHub, of course. So it's like github.com/sasha-wolf/Kinega. And it's of course also on Hex packages. So if you search for Kinega on Hex packages, you'll find it there. Yeah. If they want to ask me some questions, so if they want to ask me about a few things, you can find me on Twitter. So wolf4earth, like the four is the actual number, right? And I'm pretty active there. I mean, I don't tweet much myself. I tend to retweet mostly. But I have a Twitter on my phone and I open it daily. So yeah, if somebody tweets me something, I'm going to see it.
Nice. Yeah, and just for people who are trying to find it or trying to figure out how to spell it, it's K-N-I-G-G-E. So I wouldn't have come up with it because I don't speak German either. So, all right, anything else that we should discuss on this before we do our picks and our shout-outs?
Hey, folks, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've been working a lot on figuring out how to help people become the most valuable developers on their teams or becoming the top 5% of developers in the field. If you're looking to level up, figure out how to contribute more, get the career you want, get the career that you want that will support the lifestyle you want, then you should check out the Most Valuable Dev Summit. I've invited some of my friends across the community, people that you've heard of, people that have worked on systems that you use on a daily basis, people who have invented new ways of doing things over the years in programming, and I've asked them one question, and that question is, how do you become a top 5% developer? How do you become one in 20 of the best developers out there? And so we're going to go ahead and have that conversation with them in interviews on the Most Valuable Dev Summit. And you can find that at summit.mostvaluable.dev.
All right. Well, let's dive into that then. Eric, why don't you start us off?
My pick for this week is the brand new book from Manning Publications called Grokking Simplicity, fresh off the press. And it's a beautiful book that basically takes you on a journey into functional programming and really breaks down fundamental concepts such as actions, side effects, calculations. And I have never read anything more clear than this in my 3-4 years of basically dabbling and getting into functional programming gradually. So I see this as a kind of a curriculum that I'm absorbing on my functional path. As some of our listeners will know, I am, you know, more of a Elixir beginner. And for me, this is really crystallizing a lot of concepts in my head. So beautiful book. You can find it in the show notes.
Nice. We've had Eric on JavaScript Jabber a couple of times too, who is the author. So yeah, good stuff there.
Super.
Yeah. Alan, what are your picks?
Yeah, my pick for this week is basically the Pragmatic Studio again. I've been going back to it to kind of hone my skills again in Elixir. I've been focusing more on Flutter recently, and it's just been great to kind of dig through all the different courses again. Sometimes if you don't play with language for a while, you tend to kind of forget pieces of it. And so I went back to it, started doing the courses again, and it's all clicking again. So sadly, I haven't been doing as much Elixir as I used to, but yeah, it's also been good. And also, I'd also like to pick one more thing, specifically in Elixir, with statements. We've been having a lot of case statements within our stuff, and I love having with statement now. I'm so happy that they put that in there because it really cleans up a lot of code too. So that's my picks.
Nice. Alan, do you want to tell them about flying high with Flutter?
I was thinking about also using it as another pick, but I didn't want to be too greedy with my time, right?
But, all right, well, I'll pick it when it's my turn.
Okay, go ahead.
All right, Adi, what are your picks?
Yes, I've got another Pragmatic Studio book, Testing Elixir, by two of my co-workers, actually, Jeffrey Matthias and Andre Lopardi. And it's in beta right now, but it's, the first testing book in Elixir. We desperately needed that. So it's a great book. And I've got another pick for people who like dabbling with other like programming languages. There's GleamLang, which is a type safe language written on the Erlang virtual machine. So check both of those out.
Awesome. All right, I'm going to throw out some picks. My first pick is going to be this awesome new podcast called Flying High with Flutter. It is a Flutter podcast. It's hosted by this cool guy named Alan. And he's been interviewing people from the Flutter community. So if you're looking for a terrific way to build mobile apps, then go check it out. Alan from this show is the host, if you didn't pick that up. And yeah, he's been going through the Dev Influencers Accelerator and just been watching him build this out. It's been really exciting, and Flutter looks so interesting. So I'm excited about Flutter, and you know, he's gotten me excited. So I just want to get you all excited about it too. So definitely go check it out. We'll put a link to it in the show notes. And then I'm going
to... What I also want to say is, of course, thanks to you and JavaScript Jabber, we managed to get Casper, who's actually one of the creators of Dart, coming on pretty soon. So we're going to be live streaming that one on YouTube. And then, of course, a few weeks later on, it's going to actually come out as the podcast episode. So yeah, that's just what I wanted to say. So in case people get this in time. they can check it out on live stream and actually talk to this guy. It's quite interesting. He actually was, it seemed like he was actually influenced a lot by Erlang Elixir, because they have this idea of isolate, which is basically similar to a process in Elixir. So it's quite interesting, the whole VM.
Yep. And it's funny too, because we had Casper on episode like 30 of JavaScript Jabber. So it was like 9 years ago when I actually talked to him. But anyway, yeah, super fascinating stuff. And he's an exceptionally friendly guy. So fun stuff there. I'm also going to shout out about another podcast. As we record this, it is May the 4th, which is Star Wars, you know, May the 4th be with you. But on May the 5th, 2011, we recorded our first episode of Ruby Rogues, which is the podcast that kind of got all of this stuff started. It wasn't my first podcast, but it was the first panel podcast that kind of got all this stuff rolling. And it was the Ruby Rogues podcast audience that asked for an Elixir podcast, and that's where this came from. So I'm going to shout out about that. Incidentally, tomorrow as we speak, our 496th episode will come out on Ruby Rogues. So I just wanted to shout that out, because it's just kind of a fun and cool dealio. We are going to do a special 500th episode, so stay tuned for that. That'll come out, I think, the beginning of June. But anyway, it's kind of interesting to think that 10 years, we've been doing these podcasts for 10 years. And then one last pick that I want to throw out is, and I don't know if I picked this last week. If I did, I apologize. But I'm going to put two up, actually. One of them is my phone started to kind of go out. And at first it wasn't recognizing the SIM card, and then it had trouble charging. It's working now, thank goodness. I'm waiting for a new SIM card to show up from my other phone. But I bought this phone on a website called Back Market, kind of like Black Market, but it's Back Market. And I'm a cheapskate when it comes to a whole bunch of stuff, including my phones. So I bought an iPhone 8 Plus. Yeah, I know. It's old, but anyway. So yeah, I'm just waiting for the SIM card to show up for it. But it was like $250 or $300. And anyway, it was a terrific deal. I think I doubled the space that I have on it. And anyway, I'm kind of excited to have a new phone and to have gotten a good deal on it. I was looking on some of the classified websites, and I could get used ones from like private individuals for about that price. So to get one that had like a 90-day guarantee and had somebody actually like tune it up or whatever they do with it, I was pretty happy with it. So anyway, I'm going to shout that out. And then the last pick I have is I am putting together premium versions of the podcasts. So if you don't want the ads from our sponsors in it, and currently the ads are coming from me with just whatever I'm working on, you can go check all that out at devchat.tv/premium. And then you can see the list of all the shows that you can get all the premiums on. You can get any one of the shows for $10 a month, or you can get all of the shows. And I haven't decided what the price is going to be, but by the time you can get it, I will have set the price. It's probably going to be like $40 or $50. I'm also doing a premium show called the Dev Chat Diaries. And I'm just going to be talking about what's going on with me and what's going on with kind of the progression of devchat.tv. You'll probably get a little bit of backstory. And I'll probably explain some of the stuff that I commonly get asked as far as like, hey, what happened with this? Or where are you with this thing? Or, hey, you know, there was this show and now it's not on anymore. Where is it? But it's going to be mostly forward looking. So it's stuff that I don't necessarily want to just discuss completely publicly. And so I figure people who are at least fans enough to drop $10 a month to hear it, I'll put it out there for them. And then if people are interested in that, then that's kind of where we'll end up with that. And then, yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Sasha, do you have some things you want to shout out about?
Actually, yes. So, I mean, since a few people already picked books, I'm going to do that too. So I want to shout out about the book called Humans versus Computers by Goiko. And now I'm going to butcher this. Goiko Adzik. I'm not sure how to pronounce that, to be honest. But it's a book where he writes about how wrong assumptions made by software engineers collide with the real world. So for example, this one guy who had the license plate null got a bunch of tickets from all over the United States and things like that. So it's really entertainingly written, and it actually teaches a few things about, okay, maybe some assumptions you shouldn't make in software. So yeah, pretty good book.
Awesome. And if people, I think we got your social media, actually. So let's go ahead and wrap up. Thanks for coming, Sasha. This was fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed being here.
All right. Well, we'll wrap up here. Thank you all for listening. And until next time, Max out.
Bandwidth for this segment is provided by CacheFly, the world's fastest CDN. Deliver your content fast with CacheFly. Visit CacheFly.com to learn more.